I'm Lester Holt.
Okay, so we got a new Dateline for you. It's a Friday episode, so we got a full one. And we've got, of course, top of the pops. We got Mr. KM, Keith Morrison, hosting this one. And he's great, as usual.
Here's Keith Morrison with On the Hunt for the Zombie Hunter.
Guess what, Kate? I've got a description for you that's pretty good.
Let's hear it.
I got it from an alternate website that I'll tell you after I read it. The naked bodies of two women are found 10 months apart near the Phoenix Canals in the early 1990s, even though police find a decapitated head in near-perfect condition, and one of the victims is found in a child-sized bodysuit that someone recognized. The case goes cold for 20 years. Decades pass before a quote-unquote new method of sleuthing brings the killer's face to the front page, a place he's been before. The man in question was a bit of a local celebrity. What do you think?
Did you get that from your own personal blog?
I knew I'd give it away. I got it from KMDB.com, which is the Kurt Money database. I wrote that description.
I like it.
I thought it was pretty good.
I like it.
So, IMDB, we'll be going to the KMDB.com from now on. There's a few hints in there of what my opinion is of this app, so we'll see how that unfolds. But this baby aired on Halloween night. Kate, overall thoughts, what'd you think of this app?
Well, I'm glad Keith hosted, because if he hadn't, I probably wouldn't have liked this. The title is misleading.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Because they didn't know they were looking for a zombie hunter. They found out he was a zombie hunter once they figured out who the killer was. But it's not like they were searching for a zombie hunter for 2 decades.
Thank you. I mean, that is the beginning of where my takes are involving this episode. It has to do with a lot of BS that they just did to make this sound cooler than it actually is, right?
And probably because it's the Halloween episode.
I got some extra tidbits. I don't know if I'm going to call him a Kurt Money patented bomb, though, because this story's everywhere. It was a Snapped. It was a 48 hours. I watched them both. I got good info from both, actually, Kate. And one of them might just blow your f***ing mind.
Well, good.
Okay.
Because there are some things in here that I wanted to know more about.
Yeah. And just overall, like, as I'm watching this episode, I don't want it to sound like I don't like Dateline, because I have very strong opinions about how I think they should be doing their show. But the baseline of this is they're the best at doing it, and I love them. But I do have opinions about choices they make.
Well, sure.
And in the past, we've gone, oh, it was a shorty, so they didn't have time to talk about whatever. This was a full-on app. It was a super famous story. And everybody and their mother was willing to talk about it. So there's no excuses for this one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Any opinions we have are going to be pretty valid.
I agree. I feel like there was some key information left out. And it also felt like they were kind of spinning their wheels a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they all were so excited about getting to say that they have an episode where they're on the hunt for a zombie hunter. I think that they thought this baby was going to write itself.
I'm not sure that these cops really understood, like, Comic-Con and cosplaying culture.
Thank you. You just said the keyword, Kate, because there's nothing special about this guy. He's just into cosplay, which is very cool for him. Look, I'm into nerdy shit. You're into nerdy shit.
Yes.
This guy's into nerdy shit too, but it's just cosplay.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
Yeah. And it's actually my least favorite genre of cosplay. Steampunk.
Steampunk. There we go.
Steampunk always makes me think of that Key and Peele sketch. Do you know that one?
Which one?
Jordan Peele plays a guy who has recently become steampunk, and his friend, played by Key, is not having it. I'm steampunk now. Jules Verne and shit.
What the hell did you do to your bike?
You ain't heard? I'm steampunk now.
Look, I talked to steampunk dudes before, and I say dudes because every single one of them is a guy. I've never seen a girl into steampunk. I'm sure they exist. But it's telling that in Dateline's stock footage, they had to go to f***ing England to show you
some women.
To some women in cosplay where it doesn't look sad because there's castles behind them.
Similar to this gathering in the UK.
Because the only footage they played in this was of the f***ing idiot, like, modeling his zombie hunter look on a catwalk. The most awkward, could you imagine being at that event where they are having to, like, vamp?
And the host is like, thank you for keeping us safe.
Thank you for keeping us safe.
Right.
Kate, that was it. That was a line that I was going to play because I f***ing loved it, because I just, the banter that they've got to do to this room of silence while this loser in a top hat is prancing around.
And he was just wearing khakis and like a vest.
Yeah, and I mean, look, we'll talk about it and how he spent decades creating this character, but there ain't a whole lot to it other than that name.
The Zombie Hunter.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I've put more effort into Halloween costumes for one night.
Yeah. All right, well, let's dive into this murder. I'm going to tell you this right now because I don't want listeners to be disappointed like we're trying to front load it. I mean, this zombie hunter business comes up, but it's not until way later, and it's all just hype bull. So moving on with that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It is November 8th, 1992. A 21-year-old named Angela, who's turning 22 the very next day, she goes for a bike ride before they have their favorite shows on that night to watch.
She would always come home in time enough to watch a particular show on television.
So as soon as I heard that, I said, Google, click, click, click. What was the television schedule for the night of November 8th, 1992? And believe it or not, Snap said it. It was In Living Color.
Oh, nice.
A show back in the 90s called In Living Color.
It makes total sense.
Yeah, 22, early 90s. That's who's watching that show for sure.
Absolutely.
Let me show you something.
So she goes up for a bike ride. Her boyfriend stays behind to bake her a birthday cake. And hours pass and nobody's there.
Yeah.
The boyfriend doesn't hear anything. And the next day at work, she doesn't show up. Dateline loved to talk about how she was on the forefront of technology and all this booming tech stuff, right?
They interviewed so many of her coworkers.
Yes.
Everyone at this company. And it's like, why?
Yeah.
Several different victims they talk about, but these are the coworkers that spill all the tea, I guess.
Yeah. It is weird how many of their talking heads are just coworkers that worked with this woman who worked there for 4 months in 1992.
Right. And they thought it was unusual when she didn't show up because she had a big presentation that day.
Yeah.
But that's where the inside information kind of stops. They didn't really provide us with anything else other than, like, she had a big presentation that day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the coworkers couldn't bring anything to the table other than speaking to how it was a wild time because you could call on the phone to get your bank balance. That was the angle, and old KM was having fun with that.
Cutting edge.
Cutting edge stuff.
What did it feel like to be working for a company on the cusp of all new things?
It was fun and interesting.
Everybody at work wants to know where she is because she had this big presentation. And then that's when the cops get a call from a young mom who was going for a bike ride on the Phoenix Canals and rode through a puddle of blood. And she discovers the naked dead body of one Angela Brazos. Brazos. It sounds kind of like Steve Martin's character on Only Murders, but it's not that, and it's annoying me.
Right.
Are you?
I'm Brazos.
Oh.
They find Angela's body in the canals with shoes and socks on, but no head. Now, their first instinct is, of course, go after that boyfriend. And when they get the scoop from the boyfriend, I guess I can't really doubt him. Because what was his move the night of her disappearance? What was his move?
You mean besides making the cake?
Yeah, he went out on his own bike to look for her, but then he called a female friend that no one else knew to come over because he didn't want to be alone.
Right.
I mean, guy.
After he reported Angela missing, he called another woman.
I mean, obviously he didn't do it, but like, what kind of dummy is offering up that info or making that call? My God, I just like, if my girlfriend's missing, the last thing on my mind is, let's get another female over here in my presence right now.
Let me just have a replacement girlfriend for the night.
Yeah. So, like, they thought it was Joe, her boyfriend, and he was on the radio talking about how they're suspicious of him because they found a red knife in the sink, and he's like, it's icing from that cake I told you about.
Yeah, but he was cool about it. He was like, they should be looking at me.
Yeah.
It's always the boyfriend.
Yeah.
He wasn't upset or angry with them for looking at him.
It wasn't the boyfriend. And so now the Phoenix area is freaking out. What's going on? 10 months pass. They find themselves a second body with very similar circumstances. Bike riding. Phoenix Canals. Body just beat to all hell and had like carvings in her chest and stuff.
Just brutal. Really, really awful.
Brutal, brutal, brutal.
And everybody in town is terrified.
Yep.
Especially the young women. They're not going out alone. They're especially not going out at night. No more bike riding on the canals. That's for sure.
Yeah. Poor Rachel gave up working out. But yeah, Rachel was a childhood friend of the second victim, Melanie. Now, Melanie was only 17.
Yeah.
So we've got a 21-year-old and a 17-year-old dead within 10 months of each other. Everybody's freaking out. The cops, of course, try and say, oh, they're not related. Stop it.
How could they not be related?
Yeah.
Same location, same kind of brutalization, same kind of victim.
Yeah. So then this baby goes cold. I mean, they want to solve it, and they're putting out flyers with pictures of the bike, and they interviewed. The all-star for the app is the newspaper man. Look, it's not like he rode away with it. It's an easy title to get this app because there wasn't a lot of all-star behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give him the all-star just because I love... I don't know. I just like the vibe of the old school newsman with his shoe leather, like going out to get the story, and how he's like, the cops didn't want to talk to the likes of me.
That's cute.
And I said, was she riding a bike? And he said, you guessed it, buddy.
They were putting out articles every couple years. They were trying to see if they could drum up some more info or tips from the public, because the case went cold and they didn't have any leads. And it actually wasn't until 2011 that a new detective took over the case.
Yeah.
And that was Sergeant Troy Hillman. And this dude looks like Quagmire.
Dear Diary, jackpot.
I have a good one too, but that I totally see it. I absolutely see Quagmire. Mine is also a cartoon character.
For him?
Yes, because I think that he looks like he works for the CIA in a DreamWorks movie. Like a G-Man in a cartoon with glasses that says like, no, sir, you can't enter through this doorway.
He does. This guy, he's got these blue eyes and this really strong jaw, and he's in great shape.
Yeah.
And you think, looking at him, like, this guy is a stud, but he looks like a cartoon.
Yeah.
He's not a stud.
He's not a stud.
But he's got all the qualities of a stud.
But he's not. Yeah, that's true. There's something off here.
I liked him.
I did. I liked him. I liked him. I gotta say this, before we get to that cold case, during that long stretch, like, DNA advancements were taking place. So every time they check in on it, there would be like a new development. And they would hope that, all right, well, now maybe we can get a hit. We can get a hit on something. And it's a few years after the murder, but DNA advancements are far enough along where they can confirm that the same guy did both. So, like, the thing that the Phoenix police were trying to ignore and not want to be true, they had to say, well, the DNA matches. It is the same guy. And actually, this case was such a cold case. They showed it in the app. Like, there was an official sign posted by the walkway that was like a, have you seen this bike type of thing. And it wasn't like a missing person sign. This was like bought with government money. It looks like a street sign.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, so you know, to get that ball rolling and have that money spent and have that sign made, that probably took years. I mean, that's just how long this was cold and how much they wanted anything to grasp at.
Yeah.
So they show that sign, it's still up. And like, if you have any information on this purple bike, you know, let us know.
So speaking of the canals, I just want to say that Keith is just so goddamn cool.
Yep. Yeah.
The shots of him walking along the canal while he's narrating, it's just effortlessly smooth. And he does the newscaster thing of the information dump of facts, but in a way where it feels like he's just casually talking to us about it. It's fully scripted, but his delivery is so chill that he's just chatting.
Yeah.
He's taking pauses. He's looking around.
That's the key, I think, to the magic of KM is the pauses. Because I thought the same thing when they show him in a wide shot where they're going into him and he's like standing at the walkway to the canal and he's leaning in and he's got his arms crossed. And he is, you're right, just so effortlessly cool. The amount of pauses he takes between a sentence is so long, and it shouldn't work, but it does work magnificently. I mean, this is why Dateline, there's no debate of who's on top, because of this right here.
Yes, he was in his element in those canals, and he really just seems like he's riffing.
Yeah, he's in a fucking sweet spot. I feel like he can just crank him out, right? Like, he can turn on that Keith Morrison VO, and we buy it hook, line, sinker. Like, I'm just like, that's authentic. That is real deal.
Mm-hmm.
He's good. He's f***ing good. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. So in 2011, they assign this Hillman guy, who's Quagmire or CIA bad guy from a DreamWorks movie. Wild ass face. Okay. But he's a nice dude. And he takes the reins on this. And he does this thing where you go back and you review all the stuff. And he's looking at old leads. And on all three of these shows, okay, they all love to tell how many leads they had to go through. And I think we know why, which we'll talk about later. Because there's one that they missed because they're f***ing idiots.
Dinguses.
But they go, it was at least 600. It was at least 800. It was 1,000 leads that we had to go through one by one. All the shows, they were very, very clear about that. So this guy's working on the case. 3.5 years, he's busting his ass on this. He's got a cold case unit. He's got a team hired. Nothing's doing. Then comes 2014. They're at like some sort of cop conference. And like the guy's coworkers like comes up and says, hey, chief, this lady says that she could maybe find people using genealogy and like DNA. She just wants to talk to you. Go hear her out.
And this was before the Golden State Killer was caught using this kind of technology. So they're like, okay, that's new.
Yeah, it was 2014. So that's 4 years before the Golden State Killer. We know all about it now and it's dope. But at the time it was brand new and they were scared. They even said they were like nervous. Like what could happen? But sure enough, she walks away with that DNA strand that they had, that one sequence of DNA. She spends a few weeks with it. They're waiting to hear back. A few weeks pass, and she calls up and says, I got a name for you. Not a full name, just a surname, as she said.
And she said, hey, Troy, I think his surname is Miller.
Somewhere along these lines, they had gone to a place in Philadelphia.
The Vidoc Society, which this is the first time I'm hearing about these folks, an organization of volunteers from various law enforcement agencies and I assume academia, and they help police make criminal profiles. And I don't remember ever hearing about this in any other true crime tidbit.
I have in one other one, but I don't remember them having that name. But yeah, it's like a legit thing that the cops can hire them and they'll do some digging. Now, this brings up, I've got a solution to the problem that I'm about to present to you. Okay, so I want you to know that as upset as I'm going to get, I've got the solution in my back pocket.
Okay.
All right, so Hillman, they get this last name Miller. And so he takes that name and goes, well, let's go take a look back at her files. Because when they had hired that Vidoc Society, the one thing that they said over and over again, this guy is in your files. 95% chance that the guy you're looking for is already in your files. You've already got him. That's what, that was their main takeaway. Mm-hmm. So they go back with this name Miller. And what do you know that somebody had called in an anonymous tip about one Mr. Brian Miller in suspicion of being the canal killer.
Right after the first murder, too.
This was sent after the first murder. No, second murder. Second murder because someone calls and said, hey, my roommate had that weird jump suit that one of the bodies was found in. That child-sized jumpsuit
was in his room.
Was in my roommate's possession.
Yeah.
So they find this name in there, and Hillman's wondering, why didn't we look into this earlier? And it says so in their notes that somebody made the bright decision that said that this man was too young at the time to do this type of crime.
Because I guess teenagers can't commit murder, huh? Dinguses.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can't believe that that mentality survived to even the 90s of like, he's a kid, he couldn't do anything bad. Get the f*** out of here, you lazy, worthless, no good, nothing. Like, I mean, come on! Kids can't be evil? Give me a break. So that was what they were told. They were like, okay, that's a great tip, but f***ing bag it because he's too young. Now, okay, this is when they do a little bit more digging in these boxes. And the thing is, Brian Miller's, that's not the only time he appears.
No.
Okay? Because 3 years prior to the first murder, he was accused and convicted of stabbing a woman. Just like this. He was convicted and sentenced to juvie, like he was a minor, but it had happened.
So this is another thing where I want to know a little bit more information. When the woman who was stabbed while walking to work, she ran into her job and her fellow employees called the cops. The cops came, brought an ambulance, and she describes her assailant.
Yeah.
And then Keith says,
yeah,
it didn't take long for them to track him down to a nearby apartment complex and bring him right back to the ambulance. I want to know
that was
how the hell they tracked him down so fast. Just describing like an unassuming teenager and then them being like, oh yeah, no, we got him. It's like, well, how? Was he yelling? Was he being shady? Did someone see him hiding or doing something weird? Was the apartment complex literally right next to the mall? How did this go down? Because that's crazy.
Yeah, okay, so it's nuts that they caught him right away. Like, maybe he was covered in blood or something. But what shocked me most about that scene is when they said they brought him back and said, hey, is this the guy?
Right.
Like, what? I'm sorry, that was still happening in 92, where they go, hey, is this the suspect? I mean, he sees you right now, so if you say yes, he's gonna know it was your fault. But yes or no, is this the guy that did this to you? I couldn't believe that that was a possibility.
Also, was the apartment complex where they found him, was that his apartment complex? Or was he just hiding out at a nearby complex.
I don't know.
And if it was his, how would they know where? And
right.
It seemed so crazy. I wanted to know how that went down.
Right. So that's wild. And he's convicted and he gets like 7 months or something.
Yeah.
Now, while he's locked up, he turns 18. And when he turns 18, they got to kick him out, right? Because he's in juvie. So he's all set. He's 18. He's like, I'm walking out of here. I'm going to go rape and kill. But then his mom goes to the police and says, whoa, before you let out my son from jail, I got to show you this thing. I found this list he made in his room. He called it the plan. It's multiple pages, and it talks about how he wants to dismember women and hates them and stuff. So can you keep him in jail, please?
And they say no.
Yeah.
This plan of his, it was in great detail, exactly the way he ended up killing two women later on. It was all the same.
Yeah. And now there's Hillman in 2014 putting this together. Like, he did this. We had this wild list in this box of clues, right? He's putting it together and he goes, well, yeah, too, because Keith is like, were you upset that you had the info the whole time? And he goes, well, yeah, to a point.
Did it make you wonder why that was not acted on earlier?
To a degree, yes.
And I just think these poor cops, like the quote unquote good cops now that have to answer for lazy cops 20 years ago, it kind of sucks to be them.
He did a good job.
He did.
He did a good job of being like, look,
yeah,
things happen. You're dealing with a lot of leads that you have to run down. Things slip through the cracks.
Yeah.
He was not blaming anybody.
That's probably some dumb dance you got to do because the cop will be mad or offended if you say you didn't solve it. Or this cop will probably be mad if you try and solve it.
Oh, totally.
The infighting of that type of bullshit at a police station has just got to be
so much drama.
So much drama.
Tis well, Cedric, tis well.
Okay, so they start looking into this guy, Brian Miller.
Brian grew up and got married and had a kid and moved to Seattle, but in Seattle, he was arrested for stabbing another woman, although was not convicted, which was clearly a mistake, and I feel like it's probably a case of the jury not knowing about his previous stabbing when he was a juvenile. That was probably all sealed.
Right.
Otherwise, they would have been like, yeah, you did it before. You did it this time.
Yeah, but also, so he gets off on self-defense, which is insane, because what was he defending himself against? But it worked. He was acquitted, okay? It was a matter of he said, she said, and they believed him over this poor woman. And that was in 2002. So when he gets out of juvie when he's 18 and his mom is like, he's got this list. I don't want him. The cops are like, well, we don't either. They kick him out to a halfway house, okay? He's living in a halfway house, and eventually he moves in with his grandparents. And we see footage of him from that time. Like, that home footage we see of him in his dorky glasses and stuff, in his colic, in his hair, like, that was literally a few months after he had gotten out of juvie and his mom refused to take him in.
And he looked like a psychopath.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he did look like a little shit, scrawny kid, but yeah, he looked like a psycho.
He did.
Yeah, and his grandparents looked very sweet, but they were also a red flag because they were so old and nice and weird looking. I was like, oh, these poor people don't know what they got. They don't know what they're dealing with here. He had just killed somebody. Anyway, so he's living with his grandparents. That stuff happens. He meets his wife, Amy. Now, of course, this is where I got some extra info for you, Kate. Of course, Amy had never dated before. Of course, Amy was a hardcore Christian that wanted to serve her husband.
Yep.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Married him straight away. Guess where they went on their first date?
Chili's.
No, a place called Castles and Coasters, which if you remember from some of the drone footage, you see Castles and Coasters in the canal footage because that's where they found the grate where they found the decapitated head was outside the Castles and Coasters, which is we see in the footage.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the whole time I'm watching this going, is that what Keith is talking about when he said playground? Because those are roller coasters, my man. You can't call that a playground. So then I did some Googling. And what do you know? It's a Castles and Coasters, and that's where they went on their first date, and then they went out to eat at the Olive Garden, because Brian Miller's a classy guy.
Okay, so I was close with Chili's, although Chili's is far superior.
May we have an awesome blossom, please? Extra awesome.
But isn't it kind of wild that he's on this first date, and he's like, oh yeah, then they found this head out here by this grate, that was me.
Yep.
But police said it seemed preserved somehow.
They're pretty convinced they've got their guy. It's his DNA, it matches the both spots, but they've got to get new DNA to match it to him. So the thing in 2002, they did not take his DNA because he was acquitted. So, like, his DNA would have been on file had that gone the way it was supposed to, which kind of sucks too.
Right. Yeah, so they had to stage a whole meeting with him to get his DNA in a way where he wouldn't be suspicious.
Right. And now this is the type of stuff I love so much. And, like, I live for stories where they are trying to get someone's DNA. It's so fun. They're watching him go to work. They get the bright idea to set him up to get his DNA because one of the detectives says, I know, I surveil him at work. This guy comes out on his breaks and his lunch breaks every day, blasts his crappy music, and then goes back inside, and that's it. They're like, clearly he's into security, so why don't we approach him like I'm a business manager and say, hey, can you work security at this parking lot? And of course, Brian said yes to that because of course he'd say yes to that.
Yeah, it's stroking his ego.
Miller took the bait.
Again, a good cop move that we've seen. You go after that ego.
They knew he was this cosplayer zombie hunter guy at this point, and they were like, he thinks that he's already private security in some way, so let's honor that and give him a real job. But it's not real.
But he says, yeah, I'll do that. So they set up an interview for him at a Chili's. Speaking of Chili's, right? So they set up a lunch meeting at Chili's, and surprise, surprise, he actually comes to the meeting with his 15-year-old daughter. So they're a little worried.
Yes, he and his wife and his daughter had moved back to Phoenix from Seattle. Yeah. But he and his wife had gotten divorced, and the daughter was living with him. And this is another example of a teenage daughter having to live in their murderer dad's hoarder house.
Yeah, big time.
We see this a lot.
Yeah, we do. So he shows up with his daughter, and they go through the motions. It's a pretend interview. And he, like, barely touches his drink, so they're really worried about it.
Miller ate a sandwich, but barely sipped his drink.
He leaves, and they, of course, rush in there, get the cup. And this is why, again, I got just the best high five for KM right now. Because he asked, he said, whoa.
How'd you get the water out without destroying the evidence?
Well.
Which I think is a great question. And this dumb who has clearly been asked this, he goes, well, I should have drilled a hole, but I just dumped it out the side that I didn't think he drank from. What?
Yeah, but couldn't you also just swab the rim of the glass with the liquid still in it?
Yeah, you could, but I think they sent the whole cup to them, so maybe they'd have to trust themselves with the getting the DNA swab.
Got it. That makes sense.
Okay, so they get this DNA and they send it off to get tested. And actually, you know what? I'm taking back my All-Star title that I gave to the newsman. I'm taking it back from him, and I'm giving it to the head of this DNA team. Because when they got their results, Kate, and they found out that this was indeed a match, and they had their man, the scientist got her entire team together and went down personally and showed up in person to the police station and said, Detective, you've got your guy. That's pretty cool, right?
A lot of drama. A lot of pomp and circumstance there.
And the door burst open. It's Kelly and her whole team of DNA analysts.
I love her passion for it, though. I mean, she's f***ing stoked. She hit a home run. You get to put this guy away now. Like, I don't know. I love that she was that stoked.
I think with cold cases, yeah, it's probably a much bigger deal to announce that kind of thing. And everyone's so invested by that point.
I give special leeway to scientists because this is not usually their bag. Like, cops love the attention. They want their own movie bullet about them. Right? Like, cops want to be superstars, but scientists don't. So, like, it's out of character for them to go, like, everybody get in the car. We got to tell them. I get to say it. I love that kind of enthusiasm from scientists.
Yeah.
Unheard of. Why not just phone?
All right. So they got him. So they arrest him. They arrest him at work, which is always good. Don't do it when he's home. Do it in front of everybody.
Mm-hmm. Make a scene. Biggest scene as possible.
So now we got him arrested and we get him to the interrogation room. And this is where my hatred just boils and boils and boils because he does the usual bullshit where he's trying to plant things that you say that he's crazy. And he's like, I can't even stand the sight of blood. Why would I do this? Like performing for the camera.
Uh-huh.
What do you think about that?
How you going to hunt zombies, Brian, if you're scared of blood?
That's a great question.
I can't even stand the state of blood.
So now is when we can get to and really unpack this zombie hunter thing, because they discover this in their process of going, okay, who is Brian Miller? And boy, did they love finding this out. They loved it.
This is our version of Jack the Ripper.
Those poor cops in the photos with the zombie hunter guy, bet they regret posing for those photos.
They got egg on their face right now.
Yeah, they do.
Miller even posed with Phoenix police officers.
So yeah, it turns out that he's into cosplay and he has a police car and a big gun and he walks around and just gets asked about it. Like, that's how he's a zombie hunter. And this is in 2022.
Yeah, and his cosplaying friend says that there's a dummy in the backseat at all times, too, of a zombie, and he just rides around and pretends that he caught that zombie, I guess.
Yeah. That friend was weird, and he was talking about how when they turned left, it would slide to the right.
Take a right turn, and it slides back behind him.
So Brian's in jail prepping for the trial, and he's found some dummy lawyer that he has convinced. Actually, not even convinced, because Brian says he doesn't have this, but the lawyer he gets says, okay, yeah, Brian did it, but it's because his mom was mean to him as a kid, and he has dissociative amnesia, okay? So all this bad stuff, that's because his mom was mean, and he doesn't remember it. So it's like it's not on his shoulders at all.
That's not how that works.
No.
And
definitely not.
I do believe his his mom could have been mean. I mean, he hated women. And a lot of times that is something that happened early on with your mom or something, but that's not an excuse. And he did that.
Yeah, and I'll present this. Amy's testimony gave us a lot of gold, Kate, that I'm about to unleash on you, and you're going to be shook that Dateline didn't use it, okay? You're going to be floored. Also, what's funny about the mom, so he says that because his mom was so mean, he's like this. But as we learn from Amy, when they moved back to the Phoenix area, they moved in with his mom. And Amy was like, I couldn't tell that. Like, I'm not saying that if you're around your abuser, or as an adult, you have to be mean to them or hate them, or you weren't abused. But I feel like for his defense to be truthful, that like his mom did something so deep-seated in him that he like beheads people, and we're supposed to say it's okay, he shouldn't be able to live with said mom and be cool.
Right. And bring his daughter there too.
Yeah, absolutely. So Amy's testimony, we learned some crazy stuff. Like, for instance, he was in jail for 10 months in 2002 when he was arrested for stabbing that woman and then later cleared. But Amy says that when he got back from prison, he had changed and he wanted to do sex stuff. Like, he would send letters to her while he was in prison asking if he could put needles in her boobs and stuff.
Tight.
Yeah. So there's that. He came out and he wanted to do all this stuff. And of course, Amy's mentality is, well, I got to be a good wife.
No.
So she went with
no,
it.
No.
Yeah.
No, I wanted that to be the reason why she divorced him, not that she went along with it.
Eventually, that's why they did split up. But she tried to play ball with this and, like, be the dutiful wife. So that scares her. And now this is it, Kate. I've been teasing it, and I'm going to put it down right now. That Amy testified that when they were married, Brian had confessed that when he was younger, a young blonde girl had come to his door selling something, and he pulled her in and killed her.
Amy had a shocking revelation for the detective, that he had killed a young girl in Phoenix years earlier, before he'd ever met Amy.
He ballparked it as being in the early 90s. So when the detectives get this info, they do a little digging. Was there anybody missing from that time? Yes, there was. 6 months before the first murder, Brandy Myers, age 13, is going door to door to sell stuff for her school in his neighborhood. And the last place she was seen was two houses away from Brian Miller's.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
13-year-old Brandy Myers was a little girl collecting money for a school bookathon in her North Phoenix neighborhood, going door to door.
So it's at the end of the Dateline, when they're like, well, do you think he killed other people? And they're like, well, definitely. They're probably saying definitely because there's a third body that Dateline is not mentioned, which he clearly fucking did.
Why didn't they mention that?
No clue. Okay, they had a picture of the girl. They had her full name. They had like all this stuff about how she went missing. It was in his neighborhood. He had told this to her in confidence years later, that it was this young girl selling something door to door and he just pulled her in. Like, that just happened to fit what one of these things that had happened. So that's 2 months after the video footage. When we see him being all weird and skeevy with his grandparents, 2 months prior to that is when that little girl went missing.
There are definitely things in this episode that could have gotten cut out so that they had time to add that in.
Yeah, I think it's a valid point because God, did they spend so much time on technological innovation stuff about how it was a different time and how it was the 90s. They spent so much time on that, barely talked about in the other ones.
Right.
Barely talked about.
They spent so much time on that first victim and talking to those coworkers.
It was 1992. Technological innovation was exploding everywhere.
They could have just trimmed that. And also, we didn't need all that cosplaying footage. We didn't need it.
No, we didn't.
Wow, that's really bad.
Even with Amy's account, investigators did not have enough evidence to charge Miller in Brandy's disappearance.
I want to know why Dateline didn't mention that.
Look, we love Dateline, but they can still f*** up.
Here's the thing. I liked this episode, but this is what I call an eye roll episode.
Yes.
And it's an eye roll for two reasons. The first eye roll is, he's just a guy who does cosplay and he murdered somebody 20 years ago. That's the first eye roll. That's not like victim blood on the car. None of that shit's true.
It was like he was hiding in plain sight.
Eye roll number two is, I'm sorry, it's been 5 years. You cannot present the genealogy thing as a big fucking twist anymore.
That's why Hillman agreed to meet with a woman from California who had been pitching an idea. It sounded crazy.
It's played. I'm sorry. They're still treating it as if it's like a little thing called DNA. You can't have that be your final act twist, that it was solved by genealogists. It's like that's the only way they're solved today.
Yeah, that's thin.
Absolutely.
The Dateline audience is far more sophisticated than that.
I'd like to think that they are. And also, you know how I feel about cold case files and whatnot. The new forensic files that I watch, 80% of those cases are solved because of the genealogy thing. Look, I love that we're clearing these murders, Kate, okay? I'm not going to sit here and say I'm bummed that these murders are solved, but It's not quite as interesting anymore as when they had to go undercover to hope that he spit into a cup and then they had to go dig it out of the trash and stuff. Like, this one's not as fun after the first time you go, oh, okay, that's cool, right? Like, what do you do with genealogy in an episode? Are you excited or are you bummed? Because I'm bummed.
Well, it actually made me want to do 23andMe. I haven't done it yet. And I don't think they're going to find someone I'm related to murdered a bunch of people, but it's fun to know where you came from.
My position on this, I'm probably already in that database because a family member probably did it. Like, my aunt did it, so I'm in there.
Yeah, I don't think anyone in my family did it.
Here's what I would like to know, and maybe this will help me grasp how to watch the genealogy thing in process. Because even with DNA, none of that shit makes sense, but they've always got that blue liquid they would drop into the gel, and they've got, like, the sequences and stuff that visualize this is a DNA sequence that's different from this one. So they give her a DNA sequence of the killer, and she leaves for weeks, and it's very expensive. They talk about how pricey it is.
Yeah, they had to fundraise.
Well, they almost did, and then they finally decided to pay for it, which I think seems like the move, because we've seen that in the past where, like, the victim's family was going to pay for something. And then finally the police were like, no, okay, we'll do it. Fine.
All right, we'll do it. It's actually only like $3,000. We'll do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be on the news, I guess.
Like, how much is it? How much?
Yeah, I want to know. I mean, at the most, $20,000, maybe.
Yeah, but isn't like 23andMe like $40?
Do you feel this way about this technology? Do you agree that it's kind of taken a little hit out of true crime shows or no?
Yeah, but I also felt that way about cell phone technology.
But that still has interesting stuff because they can find the text on there.
Yeah, but the whole tracking and pinging off of a tower, and it's made murdering a lot harder.
Absolutely. Even if you turn it off, that's a sign too.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, there's 40 minutes of nothing. So what were you doing then?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. There was another case. Of course, it was a Forensic Files where they had to get the DNA and they had the guy in the car. And so they turned the heat on to make him want to take a sip of the water they had offered him so that they could get the DNA. Like, that's the kind of stuff where I'm like, this is it. This is a sweet spot. I love it.
And once he took the sip out of that straw, I knew I had what I wanted.
Okay, so this trial happens and they're really going hard on this. His mom screwed him up and it's not his fault. Oh, and also he chose a bench trial, which is just the judge deciding, no jury.
Yeah, I wonder why he chose that. I guess he thought there was no way a jury of his peers would ever find him not guilty, or that he'd already been through a jury trial before and maybe he just said, nah.
You mean the jury that acquitted him? I mean, he should like juries.
True, but this was kind of a slam dunk.
Also, what I want to know is he allowed to know the gender of the judge? I mean, look, it shouldn't matter to him, but if there's one thing we know about him, it's that he hates women. So when he rolled up into that trial and saw a female judge, do you think he was like, fuck, why'd they pick a bench?
I hope so.
Me too. I hate this guy. He sucks. He definitely did it, and everybody agreed.
Yep.
And not only that, but they gave him the fucking death penalty, which I didn't know was still an option. I mean, he'll never make it. What do we know about this? He's gonna sit on death row now for 20 years.
Yeah.
But also, we're anti-death penalty. I'm just saying, it doesn't matter, really.
Well, it's Arizona. It's like Texas and Arizona, they still rock that death penalty.
And true crime shows are always, like, the debate of, are they gonna get the death penalty? But I'm always kind of like, when they get it, it doesn't happen.
Right. And to me, life in prison is punishment enough.
I mean, I think they get used to it and stuff. And you know, if you're a bad enough guy, you're like a celeb for it. But
I don't know how popular he'd be on the yard once his fellow inmates found out that he was into steampunk.
Yeah, you're right. They probably found that out and they were like, let's get him.
They just shivved him right there.
Yeah.
You're wearing a top hat with a door on it.
He does have email in prison. Which shocks me that, I mean, death row inmates even have access to email. Which makes me think that if there's a time where I want to reach out to one of these yahoos, I might do a little digging on this email and inmate.
Hmm.
What do you think?
I'll let you handle that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not trying to become pen pals and marry him. I want to, like, if there's one where it's like, if I could email Kim and go, like, can you tell me who else was on your list? She might tell me. Who knows?
Can it only be if they're in prison for life with no possibility of parole? Because I don't want anyone getting out of prison and, like, trying to find me.
Yeah. I mean, that's what my money says. She doesn't want me talking about anybody ever because she's like, people will come in and kill you.
She's right.
So, I mean, that's the end of this episode. He's in jail. He's on death row. Closure for the family, as good as they can have it. Now, this case and the discovery of this hint, clue that they didn't act on at the time, it just brings to the forefront again how one person's laziness can doom a case for decades, and it sucks that that's the case. Think about it like this, and the guy presented this when he wanted to pay for the genealogy thing. He said, you pay for us to go find DNA of people in other countries. That's more expensive. And I think that's a great point, is because in this episode, they talk about all these people and how they checked all their DNA and how even there were murders in Germany that sounded similar, so they flew out there. That doesn't impress me because that's a free vacation for you, you dope. You know what would impress me is if you went into that back room, opened up a box and said, clue number one, nope. Clue number two, nothing. Clue number three, oh, here's something. Like, I'd be impressed if he just put his eyes on every page of every file.
I hear you.
Now, this is where a brilliant idea comes in. We're always talking about how, like, they don't have enough people. There's not enough in the budget. Blah, blah, blah. Guess what? There are hundreds of thousands of Katelines and Kurt Monies in the world that would probably pay a fee to be allowed to dig into cold case files and do this, like, boring ass tedious work. Don't you agree that there's a bunch of psychos out there like us that would pay to do that?
With the amount of women who solve murders just by looking on Facebook, I absolutely agree. There's a whole community out there of people ready to help.
Yeah, they already do it because this Vidoc Society. It's kind of like that. Now, I get it. It's like we can't just open up this to the public. Maybe there's a vetting process, but like there's got to be something you can do. There's got to be an infinite amount of info that like dork true crime fans like us would love to file through. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like their nightmare is literally what some people like us go to bed and dream about.
It's like when that plane went missing and people were able to look at the satellite footage of the ocean and try to help find it.
Oh yeah.
And thousands of people spent hours combing every inch of that satellite footage and they ultimately didn't find shit. But people were looking.
Yeah. It's just beyond frustrating to me because this Hillman guy gets this whole victory lap for him. He found him and stuff. But all it does is highlight to me the bad parts. Like, I just, I don't know. It sucks. Oh, and also, okay. Kate, I got a question for you. Do you think that Hillman's the guy that was in charge of this?
I think after 2011, he was.
The guy that they interviewed, the detective on 48 Hours, was the actual detective whose idea it was to say, hey, let's hire him for security. It was the actual detective that was in the Chili's.
Nice.
So I was watching Dateline again going, I'm going to bust Hillman if he says I did this or I did that. This kind of thing has to happen all the time, whether it be scheduling or the fact that there were three other shows asking for their time. Like, I wonder when they go, we can't get the main guy, so we got to be careful how we write the copy. We don't want to draw attention to the fact that this is not the main guy.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So you like my idea of paying people to look at info?
Is it time for our list?
It is time for our list. What's up with your list? I forget it. Does it have a name or like a song or anything? What is it?
Kate's Unnamed List.
Sweet.
Kate's Unnamed List. Now,
what you got?
I didn't have anything this time, although they did mention that a lot of Air Force pilots were suspects throughout the investigation just because of the proximity to the Air Force base and military and whatnot. But ultimately, there were no military connections.
Boy, they really did make a big deal. And actually, speaking of military connections, is the red herrings in this episode that, like, some professor that had a military background supposedly went into hysterics if somebody said the name Angela.
Right.
Like, I knew he didn't do it because they didn't show his face or his name. So, like, when they were like, could it be the professor? And then they show stock footage of like a podium in an empty classroom. It's like, oh, this guy didn't do it.
Yeah.
But like, that's another thing. That teacher was not mentioned on any of the other episodes. So I'm going like, again, Dateline, I like that you present this as a possible option, but you're not talking about the other body that he killed. Because he's also not a serial killer. They like to throw that around. Well, he only got two on the books. So he's not.
But he attempted two other stabbings.
Yep. Yep.
And a third body. So he's definitely a serial.
No, he's not. I'm sorry. He needs three bodies. On the books. He's not a serial killer.
Well,
by definition.
By definition, but we know he is.
Oh, because of that third body? Yeah, okay. Yeah. I just didn't like it when they talked about him like he was some sort of super evil person.
That was horrific.
You got anything else for your list?
Nope. How about you?
Kick ass list. Goose egg for me today, unfortunate. I got nothing, Kate. That brings us to the end of the app. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can email us at imlesterholt@gmail.com. We're on TikTok. I'm Lester Holt. What else, Kate?
We're on Instagram at I'm Lester Holt.
Oh, yeah. And I checked the email for the first time today. Nobody's written in yet, but one of these days.
Reach out, y'all.
I'm Kurt Money.
I'm Kateline.
I'm Lester Holt. For all of us, I'm Lester Holt. Good night.
an awesome blossom, please. Extra awesome.